Woohoo!
Welcome to the Somewhere Call Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And I'm feeling so calm, cool, and collected over here on this Tuesday.
Calm, cool, and collected. The three C's, Megan. This is the CCC that you're not going to get to do.
I know. That's true, actually. Hey, too soon. That is not fair. But you know what? Maybe I'll be in the C-suite. Actually, I don't know if I want to be in the C-suite of CCC. We'll leave that one there.
Yeah. Okay. So why are you calm, cool, and collected?
I've not had matcha today. So yes. Matcha is usually like my podcast raging juice. Like whenever I have matcha, I'm like, it's time to go. It's time to make inappropriate jokes. And I just had lame ass tea this morning.
Just lame ass tea. And you know, you didn't really eat your oatmeal. I went over and there's still a whole thing of oatmeal. Man, why are you not eating your breakfast in the morning? Breakfast is your favorite meal.
Breakfast is my favorite meal. I actually did have a precision gel though, to be fair. Yes. I was like scrounging through our closet and somehow a precision gel went out over breakfast cookies, which are actually just cookies. And I was like, how is this happening right now?
Okay, I thought it was caffeinated. I'm kind of glad it's not.
Oh my God, that would be, I mean, at that point, I would just have matcha tea.
Yeah, I was just looking over at the gel wrapper and I was like, huh, that's an interesting decision, Megan.
I know, okay. It doesn't have like the gold stripes of the precision caffeinated wrapper. It's just the normal 30, so not even a bag.
No matcha because you're like limiting caffeine. Why would that be? I can't understand why that would be.
So strange. Why am I not hungry in the morning?
Yeah, why are you not? Why are you
and
not
I'm always hungry in the morning, even on days when like I wake up and life feels a little bit harder. It's like a higher gravity day. I'm like, give me cookies.
Yeah, it's like what gets you out of bed every day. So what's going on, Megan? Are you depressed? Is there something happening?
I peed on a stick.
Yeah. Oh no.
People know where this is going. Oh, no. We've shared it already.
Yeah.
I love that you're leading me on and you're like, tell them the big news. I'm like, David, everyone knows the big news.
No, there's a lot of people that have no idea that are listening to this right now. So yeah. Kind of a weird update. Let's just get right into it. Let's start with the roadmap and then get into this. So roadmap, life comes at you fast. An update on the Canyons 100K, why Megan didn't race and why we still went and got a ton of great takeaways there. Then a strength training study, a study on exercise effect variance. That's really cool for how you think about training theory. Thinking about continuous lactate monitors, an awesome new track initiative called the 776 Invitational. Some thoughts there. Why it's blood work season and more.
I love this roadmap. It's a very reasonable one.
Yeah.
I feel like when you put together the roadmaps for the episodes, it's like, we're going to do this and this and this, including uphill form and uphill running economy,
yeah,
which is in our outline, but you didn't include it in there.
No. I'm just right now, Megan, I'm a little bit overwhelmed, as I'm sure you are, going into this episode. I'm just like, let's keep this as streamlined as possible so we can talk about the main news, which is on Thursday last week, we were getting ready to go to the Canyons 100K. We have talked about this for a really long time. It was Megan's goal race. It was kind of like something that structured your life for a really long time. And I'm down on the treadmill and you come in. So why
actually,
don't you tell the story?
Okay, you were off the treadmill. So okay. I was like waiting to hear your pounding downstairs, which is evident throughout the entire house. So it was quite clear when you got off the treadmill and I was like, now is the time to go downstairs. So that morning had been feeling my boobs in a weird way, like sore boobs. I woke up and honestly had some like nipple changes. Yeah. And I was like, these boobs look like they're like hydro flask nipples instead of like nipples that have been on my body recently. And I'm like, this is not good. This is strange. So I took a pregnancy test. Didn't think it was going to be positive at all. Set it down on the counter because I was like, whatever, I'll go like finish packing and come back.
And you've done this periodically throughout
every once in a while. Yeah. It's like you have a shitty workout. You're like, meh, maybe I'm pregnant. And at that time, sometimes actually you wish for it because you're like, I'd rather be pregnant and sacrifice like 18 months of training than deal with the fact that I just had a shitty ass workout.
So this thing is sitting on the counter. And what happens next?
I look at it and it's positive. I mean, it's not like bold, bright positive because my period was due on Saturday on race day, but it was definitely a line there. And I was like, what the heck? And my brain like conceivably was like, how, like, this is weird. Like, how is this happening? So
I think I know the answer.
What?
Sex.
Yeah. Okay. But here's the thing is this like, we've been talking about this on here. Like,
we joke about this a lot on the podcast.
Actually, to the point that like when I announced the pregnancy, because I was like, you know, I was going to race Canyons 100K and I just like couldn't within me come up with an excuse other than the reality. Like and it happens, like women have to do that all the time or they feel like they have to, and that's totally okay. But for me, I was like, I just can't be there and be like, I have a stomach virus or like something's hurt in my body. And so I just let it roll with the truth.
Yeah. Okay. So you decided after you got this surprise pregnancy test, like we weren't trying. I think it's important that we're clear here. That
I know. Especially before Canyons 100K, we were definitely not trying. But here's how it went down is you had your accident.
I did. I had my accident. I got, actually, we just got the ambulance report back And there was a bystander on the scene. I never got to talk to this bystander that said, dude was launched 102 feet and then hit a fence post. So literally I went 100 feet through the air, hit a fence post, and as a result had to dial back training. And you can probably see where this is going because 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, I had to dial back training for a calf injury. And both times, what happens? But Megan pees on sticks a few weeks later.
I know. It's so wild. Well, I feel like in this process, though, it wasn't just the fact that you were dialing back training. So yeah. Like, honestly, that night that we banged, it was magical. It was great. Uh-huh. But I was kind of banging like a Halloween zombie to some extent. Like you had like lacerations all over your body. There were bruises. It was like,
my wrist was just a total mess.
It was an exercise in being extremely careful with not breaking David and yeah. nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was like, you know, you were so battered and bruised. And it was also like an act of love of you're alive and this is great.
Yeah.
But I think like, and
honestly, I thought you were going to say an act of charity. That wouldn't be good.
Yeah. It was not. It was an act of love.
Okay.
But yeah, I just feel like it wasn't our, we were kind of like thrown off our usual jam.
Yeah. So the big conclusion here, and this is for everyone to know out there. We all know this, you know, everyone tells us from sex ed on, we can edit this out if needed.
Oh, but I don't care. I'm very open.
Okay. Because it happened when I dialed back training, right? The theory I have is that
I haven't heard this yet. I'm very excited.
The pullout method never worked. I was just infertile until I backed off training.
I don't think that's true. I really don't think that's true.
Or maybe I was just so far out of it at that time that it, I just don't even know what happened.
Okay, but you did pull out. Here's the thing. This is actually what you should know is that like
everyone knows that.
Everyone knows that. I know. We know that. I'm a doctor. The, the percent effective method. But we've been doing it for like 7 years.
Yeah.
So I had that swag. I was like, surely it's going to work.
But that's the thing. The whole time I was infertile.
No.
Because like in heavy training, I was just the best birth control for me was doing like my doubles and my double thresholds.
And all of you even like frying yourself in the sauna in the and hot tub.
And I couldn't do that after my head injury. So long story short is that person.
You're the rate limiting factor.
Yeah. The 89-year-old who T-boned me in the intersection. She was actually like, have another baby, motherfucker.
She's like, I'm going to hit him to create life. It's actually, it is wild how life comes at you in the sense that like, I don't think that if that accident had happened that like we wouldn't be pregnant right now. Definitely, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of wild to think about how the two of those go hand in hand. And like something that was so tragic creates this thing that as we're joking about it, is actually really beautiful to me.
Yeah, and you've always wanted two kids. It's like,
I know,
everything.
It's actually at the point where almost every other time that we've banged outside of this one particular month heading into Canyons, I'm like, maybe if I like move my hips a little bit more, like I'll have a baby or something. And so it's like all of those other times that I was like conspiring in my head. I'm like, what if I just like thrust now and see what happens? And it happened now.
I'm imagining in like Greek mythology, there's the Fates. So who are up there just kind of pulling strings. And historically they've been portrayed as a bunch of women. I'm imagining them just being like mean girls, snickering at us, laughing so hard as they cause the situation. Okay.
Well, actually I deserve it.
Yeah.
Because if I have been doing that for months on end, it would happen like—
Oh, and also you decided not to go on birth control.
I know. I mean, truly, if I were like all about this, I'd have an IUD.
Yeah.
Yes. And which I will get one after this.
And I always see the athletes that are competing at like the Olympic level, often the Mirena IUD, the local hormone IUD is the one that's preferred. Either that, Megan, or if this all works out, you know, I'm getting a vasectomy.
Okay. I feel like you're too young.
No, Megan, my tubes don't even need to be tied. They need to be sawed off like with the ultimate hacksaw.
Actually, they're just going to go in the hot tub. We're just going to like fry them off. They're going to like tether themselves off after all of your heat training.
I just need to never stop training. That's our only solution. Okay. So I think what I'm really inspired by and is an important reflection for everybody is, okay, you get this positive test. It's totally shocking.
Literally 2 hours before we're leaving for the airport. Like I have everything packed. I made a spreadsheet.
You
for
made
this
a spreadsheet.
Race. It was so fun. I loved it. I'm like going to make a spreadsheet for a half marathon.
Yeah.
I know. And it was great.
You know, the times that you put on, I remember saying, actually your time will be, you know, 9:25. That would have been second place at this race. So, you know, and usually I'm right on that. So it shows generally where we thought you were, you know, in the contention. You never know. Like there were amazing athletes out there, as we'll get to.
Oh, so many incredible athletes.
You might have been 14 hours for all we know.
But it is wild how in my brain now, looking back on it, I'm like, the only event that was going to occur from my perspective was doing really well. Yeah. But in reality, there's like 50 to 100 other like options that could have happened, some of them ending with like DNFing at mile 10. And so it's interesting how in my brain, I'm like, I'm missing out on that big thing, but it could have sucked shit.
I love it. The legend of Megan Roach continues. Because now you have 2 more years before you're going to be on the start line of Canyons again.
That's, I was going to say 2 years feels like a lot. That's actually probably reasonable for 100K.
But then the point being, 2 years if you're lucky. And so that's the next thing I wanted to talk about. Maybe last thing on this topic is just, why did you share so soon? Because you shared on Instagram when like the world knows that women don't share till the end of the first trimester at the very earliest, which is months from now. Why did you share so soon?
Well, I think one, because it is my reality and it's my reality heading into a race. And like, I don't know. I feel like I couldn't come up with something else. Like it wasn't within me to come up with an excuse that wasn't the reality that I was experiencing. And so I think that was like one of the big points. But then I think ticking in the back of my head is like, this podcast is an episode in vulnerability.
Yeah.
Like training for Canyons 100K was vulnerable. Like it's vulnerable to put yourself out there in a big race that you're talking about for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I can do those hard things, like we can translate that to being vulnerable, because so many women are afraid to share early on. And I do think there is like a level of support and love and help that you receive when you share that you're pregnant. And I do think it's helpful for like, maybe some women need that earlier and maybe some women don't. But I think if that's you, like, I do think there need to be more examples of that.
Did you find that when you shared, like, how did that make you feel after everything was public and it was like a few hours later?
I think like it actually like solidified it more within my brain. Yeah. I'm like, wow, I'm pregnant. Like, this is real.
Instagram or it didn't happen.
And there's something like, especially too, I feel like for me, like, I've always wanted kids so bad that there is an element of like anxiety and fear peeing on sticks. And so I think like for me, it made it much more real and solidified within my own brain. There was a moment of panic of like, I shared before I even missed my period.
Yeah.
I have now officially missed my period. So like I'm feeling slightly better about things, but it is scary. It's uncertain. Like
definitely.
You look at the statistics and it's uncertain for every single
miscarriages are so common.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's the hardest. One reason we talk about this so openly, and I'm so proud of you for sharing, is in coaching, I've seen tons of miscarriages, you know, and you realize how common they are. And all of like, usually I know about the pregnancy before anybody else other than the partner, because like, you know, you kind of need to tell your coach. And in those contexts, you know, you see these women grieve and they don't have the support system to grieve sometimes, in the same way that like, you know, on this podcast, if something terrible happened, like we'd also share that and it'd be, we'd cry a lot and maybe we'd make some jokes eventually, but probably not right away. And so seeing you do that, I got so many messages from women that just said, this is one of the cooler things I've ever seen, because that societal convention is not grounded in things that like uplift other people for most, though it does for some. And it's totally valid for people to wait till the baby comes out to share that there's a baby, or to never share, just hide the baby in the basement and keep it away from social media altogether.
But I also feel like it kind of reflected my emotional state. Like, I feel like for me, it's the most beautiful reason to not start a race.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were out there very publicly at Canyons 100K. And I didn't want people coming up to me and being like, how's your hamstring?
Yeah.
When in reality, I'm like, my hamstring's fine. I'm growing something hopefully beautiful inside me. And so I feel like it just like aligned with my reality and my experience too. But I did get a number of messages of people that were like, oh, you should still race.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I feel like I felt pretty terrible. So it's actually, I look back and I'm also like, I was so lucky to think to test for pregnancy, because like,
That's such good body awareness, Megan.
It's strange. I know. Because I don't know. Like
the, when you came down, the amount that I was shocked was, I thought you were playing a joke on me. And I responded pretty well, right? I did good.
Actually, you were amazing.
I had attempt 2 after the first attempt with Leo. I did not respond great. This time I was like, let's fucking go.
I was impressed, actually. Well, you've had like waves, but we have like, people have reminded us on here of like the different names that we've been planning to call baby number 2.
Yeah.
And one of them was Lifeender. So considering that we started there,
yeah,
your response to the pregnancy test was really beautiful.
Oh yeah. No. It's a new life. Maybe chapter ender is probably the better way to say it. Page break.
The other name was Smoked Out of the Asketa.
Yeah.
So that is in contention for naming.
I'll stick with that. That's pretty good. So people wanted you to race?
Yeah, but I was like, I mean, it's kind of wild. Like, I had a great run on Tuesday, tested positive for pregnancy on Thursday, and my run Wednesday felt horrible.
Yeah.
And then every run since, like running uphill, it's like my legs are these like sandbags. It's like I'm weighted to the ground.
Yeah.
And I just think like the race wouldn't have gone well for me, especially at like the competitive level that I want to be at.
Oh my God, for sure. I feel like people telling you to race, it's like, there's a fundamental aspect of pregnancy and just the body changes and all of that, that telling someone to race is also not respecting what, how big of an undertaking this whole process is. It's almost part of the same like societal issues, I think, of why women don't tell anybody.
And some women do race in pregnancy, and that's amazing.
It's,
and
like, fine, but like you're not going to get a golden ticket or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, maybe and if this
should
was
you
like,
do 100K?
Yeah, 100K that's like has this elevation profile. I was like, I don't
when
know
your
if
body
I wanna,
already has a heart thing.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to launch this embryo down, you know, series of hills that are nasty. It's like 30% greats. I'm like, oh, I don't know about that.
Killian Jornet. I know. Killian, that could be a name.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like if I did, we might, and this embryo survived, I'd probably launch out a Killian. but I feel like, I mean, if it was like a half marathon or a 50K or a marathon, like I could see doing it, competing and enjoying. Yeah. But I do think like there is this expectation that women can like perform really well in pregnancy. And sometimes they do, but I don't think I've ever seen an athlete set a PR or have their best day in pregnancy. And I do think it's also important to talk about that too.
At the very top level. I mean,
yes, yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's exceptions to everything. Yeah. But
I mean, if they're setting a PR in pregnancy, they should be really excited for postpartum because they're going to absolutely smash that.
Yeah, and I don't think you're setting PRs on anything right now, especially not oatmeal eating. Morning sickness that you're podcasting through right now is already starting to hit this early. This is going to be an interesting one.
Oh, it's not bad. It's not worth it.
Is it worth it?
Yeah. It's all for the love of the game.
For the love of the game.
But we actually had a really fun weekend. Like, it was amazing. I got to go cheer on our athletes. And I think my big thing is like, okay, we're pivoting now. We're going to make this a super fun weekend, a celebration of life, of your life, of this new life, and have like good food. And I got to like run. Actually, one of our friends, Teddy, came with us and I was like, I'm running with my crew instead of being crewed by my crew. And it was actually like a super fun and magical weekend.
Yeah, I'm so proud of you. And, you know, I'm just so excited for all this entails. It's a lot, right? Like, again, miscarriage rates are high. There's so much uncertainty. And again, Megan, I just want to assure you, if anything happens, my sperm are probably terrible.
Like, was that so not bad. True? Why do you say that?
Megan, I was so messed up. Like,
you were on THC when this happened, right?
Yeah, and I was a few days off Oxy. So there's a lot going on in my body. And I understand that it's a lot, takes longer than that. But my dad has always told me about this epigenetic theory of like these types of things where if you're in really great shape when you conceive, that's a great sign for the baby. And like with Leo, yeah, I was in really, really great shape. This time I was, but then I got in an accident. If that epigenetic dad theory, if the mansplaining from my dad happens quickly enough, Megan, this sperm's not going to be good. This is going to be one of the sour ones.
Okay. Well, I love the man-centric view. The woman-centric view is I was in the shape of my life.
That's true.
And I feel like, so there must be like
good. You have longer time to pass on your stuff. I get one moment, one shot, one opportunity to fuck up your life entirely.
15 seconds. Actually, it was longer than that, but the event was 15 seconds, maybe.
maybe. I didn't even know.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I was like mind-boggled. I'm like, how could this have happened? But
did you scoop?
I did not.
Okay. Yeah. So many listeners wrote in and asked.
People ask that on my Instagram.
Yeah.
And that's why I love this podcast is like most people, when they share a pregnancy announcement, they don't have like five questions like that. Yeah.
There's so many great jokes. We love so the many, jokes,
it's like,
by the way.
It's amazing. It makes me like, this is how, and if something happens to our little lovely embryo, I want the jokes too. Like lots of love, but also the jokes with it. But there's so many hidden comments because crushing bitches apparently gets hidden on Instagram. So yeah, there's a bunch of good ones in the hidden comments.
Yeah. Okay. So we're also open to brainstorming names later on that can wait until much longer in the process, but we don't have a set one for this baby, though we have some ideas.
We have a girl name. We don't have a boy name.
Yes.
Do you think it's a boy or a girl?
I think it's a boy.
I think it's a girl.
Okay. Megan, I know these things. I feel it in my bones. You knew Leo was a boy, so who knows? Okay, so any final takeaways on the subject?
Just the idea that like I have had a life pivot and I'm so excited about this. Like it's, you know, like people that have listened to the podcast for a long time are like, Megan loves babies. And like, I do. And I was out biking yesterday and there's so many like baby goats and baby cows. And I'm like, I'm drawing my inspiration from Katie Scheid and baby goats.
Yeah,
and
we're like, and then the mama goat.
Yeah, and then the mama goat. And we're like, in this new world. But I have had like a hard life pivot. Like I feel like before Canyons, I was having the training and like the joyride of my life in terms of like putting together training and just feeling like my fitness was building for this event.
And professionally. Like
and overall, professionally, yeah.
The amount of time you have in work.
I feel like I've just been on this like really fun life role and got back from Canyons yesterday and it was like a sudden shift in momentum in terms of like how I think about training and how I think about life. And it's hard. And I think I just like talking openly about that because I'm sure other women have been out there and have like gotten pregnant when they're so fit. Yeah. And it is very much like a mixed emotional bag.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you.
Thanks.
And I'm there for it. And I'm excited, you know, like this is going to be a new adventure no matter how it goes, you know, even if it's, if something tough happens and I'll be there with you every step of the way, hopefully with like not making big mistakes.
Well, you'll be there. We're gonna have some good like shuffle adventures together. So like,
yeah, that's
I didn't really
true.
Get to train through my last pregnancy and
because your heart, yeah,
because my heart. And so even already being able to train is such a gift. Like I feel a lot better with training. And I feel like when you're pregnant, it really solidifies the why of what you do.
Yeah.
And like for me, like I love joy and adventure. And so that's why I'm training. Yeah. Not for 100K, not for 50K, but like maybe in the future, but the joint adventure.
Hopefully Leo is talking by the time his sibling yeah. comes out, whether yeah. now or in the future. Yeah.
Okay. And then final point is we got pregnant in my highest volume training week.
Yeah.
And
oh, good point.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like pregnancy, even talking about this is hard because so many people out there struggle with like infertility and it's like,
it's no choice. Yeah.
It's no choice. And it's like, there's 8,000 different variables that go into getting pregnant. And I have seen women like treat their body and do everything right and struggle with infertility. And it's like, it makes me really sad. And I think I'm conscious of that as we talk about this.
Yeah. Sending so much love.
Especially as we make jokes about it. It's like, we're making jokes about this with like so much love. And I just feel like for me, like I did get pregnant in my highest volume training week. And yeah. I think it goes to show the power of like burgers and ice cream and slurping, because that's one variable in 8,000. And it's at least one variable you can control.
Yeah. It is remarkable to think about, especially because for the longest time after, you know, when I met you, you always dreamed of having kids, but you always feared that you wouldn't be able to. I don't know exactly why that was, but it was a huge fear for you for a very long time.
Have you seen my boobs? They're so perfect. Small. Remember, was like, surely these little boobs can't create life.
You have the hydration flask nipples. That's what you just said.
Well, they double in size as soon as I get pregnant. So they're like, they're like functional. It's like when you, when there's like something in the wall that's like hiding so you can like create more yeah. space, and then you press a button and it like pops out. That's my boobs.
Every time at Canyons this weekend when we were crewing and people would put their front flasks in their packs and then they just lean down and simp really gently from the nipple on the bottle. I was like, this is really strange that we like mimicked evolution in our nipple design
on
our bottles.
It is so strange. Okay, here's actually one of the other reasons I decided to pregnancy test. This is a little gross. Is I could actually like see milk ducts again in my nipple.
Oh.
And I was like, that's not good. I should not be creating milk. It's like 3 days before an ultra. Like I know the taper was good, but like I shouldn't be creating stuff to slurp. I should be slurping.
But at that point, you wouldn't even need the bottles.
Exactly.
You could just go down, turn the nipple up.
Be like, this is the juice.
This is the juice. Okay. Huge adventures ahead. We love you all. Thank you for giving us the courage to just talk about things openly. And Megan, I can't wait.
It's so wild.
It's going to be a blast.
Do you know what my new mantra is?
What?
The world spins madly on. Because it's like I woke up on Monday, didn't do the race, and like the world's still going on. It's a song by the Weepies. And I feel like even if I had done the race, I'd probably still feel this way. And it's nice to be like hitting a new week.
Yeah. Post-race blues are a thing. And sometimes maybe some post-pregnancy test blues can be a thing when your life comes at you unexpectedly, you know?
Yeah. But I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're going to make those blues into the brightest, most cool blue. In fact, the new bike that Trek is getting me, what color is it? The brightest blue you've ever seen.
It's like hot turquoise. It's good.
No 89-year-old is ever going to miss me in an intersection again. Because if they do, we're going to be having triplets or something.
Actually, though, you went out to bike the other day and you were in all black. And I was like, what is wrong with you?
I figure it can't happen twice. Lightning doesn't strike twice. Yeah. That's a thing.
It's like, I thought you were going to wear fuchsia.
Oh. Yeah, every time I laugh at you right now, the back of my like my brain stem hurts a little bit. So.
Oh no.
Still got time to go. Okay, so you couldn't wear the magical fuck earrings that we talked about that Allie gave you before Canyons that you were going to wear to greatness.
Maybe I wore them a little too hard. Yeah, I really thrusted my hips. They inspired greatness.
Oh no.
Actually, I think the timing was slightly off, but the presence was felt even though they weren't in my ears.
Who even knows? Yeah. Who even knows? Yeah, you wore the lip earrings. You turned them into like earrings down there. But Allie got to wear her earrings. And we wanted to share this story because we've been talking a lot about her journey. She shares it all very publicly on her YouTube channel. We'll link to that in the show notes. Go to Allie Ostrander's YouTube. It is the coolest, most inspirational thing you've ever seen. And she just got the Olympics trial standard for the steeplechase in her first track race in many years. So, you know, maybe you put some of your energy into her for her race.
Well, she's now successfully made me cry like pre-pregnancy and during pregnancy too, both of which are amazing because her YouTube channel is so good. So like watching the video from this race, from the steeple, she's like started crying after the race and I started crying. And it's really cool to see how she stepped up with so much bravery.
And I wanted to share her Instagram post about this that reflects the YouTube thoughts, because I think that this is a really cool thing to think about no matter how your life changes and no matter how the pivots happen. I keep crying after every race. Initially, I thought it was because I was happy with my performance, but I realize it's much more than that. I've been happy with performances before, but it's never felt like this. The moment I cross the finish line, I feel such shock and relief, to the point where I spontaneously burst into tears. Lol. The reason for this is that I struggled to believe in myself. I used to gain so much confidence from what I saw in the mirror. Was I lean? Were my legs small enough? Were my abs visible enough? Etc. But since going through eating disorder recovery, I don't know where to pull that confidence from. I look in the mirror, and I know I'm not the smallest I've ever been. So no matter how my workouts have gone or where I think my fitness is, I have a hard time believing in myself. That's why, when I cross the line, I cry. Because despite the doubt and the way my brain fought against me, I was able to perform. Because each time I overcome those doubts, I get one step closer to believing. Because, one race at a time, I proved to myself that my body wasn't the reason for my success. It was always me. Just me.
That's so beautiful. It was always me, just me.
Yeah.
And I feel like it is hard to exist in a sport in a world where like the body is part of that. And yeah. I feel like it's a big reason why like so many athletes struggle with these things. And yeah. Ali sharing her message, I think it's like, it's helping so, so many young athletes.
Yeah. And getting back to like the whole pregnancy idea, I just think that a big message of this podcast in general is that you are the thing that is like behind your eyes. You know, you are the pond and all of this stuff that happens are, you know, big rocks being thrown into the pond. And that goes for, you know, the issues like eating disorder recovery or whatever. It also goes for things like pregnancy that are definitional and change your life forever, but it doesn't change like the fire in you. And it goes for infertility and all of these different things. So Megan, I'm so proud of you. So proud of Allie, and so fun to see where she's going. And I can't wait for what's next. That really, really uncertain future ahead is going to be so cool.
An uncertain future with fuck earrings.
Yes.
I am certainly pulling. They will be worn during, hopefully, if this goes well, during labor.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, right? It's the best way. You're like, fuck around and find out.
Yes. Okay, speaking of fucking around and finding out, the Canyons 100K.
Okay, what a wild race. It was actually so fun to be there and to see it play out. And can we start with Katie Scheid? That was absolutely bonkers, bananas, insane. I think one of the best all-time performances we've ever seen in ultras.
Yeah, so she ran 9 hours, 10 minutes on this course, and the winning men's time was like, I think 8:45, 8:44. That spread is so close. I think it was under 5%.
She also started taking down men's legends in the process.
I mean, she was sixth overall in the race in this highly, highly competitive race, one of the more competitive ones on U.S. soil. Truly shocking, because she went out basically just a minute or two behind the men on the very fast runnable stuff. So very fast athlete too. But then when it hit the mountains, she just kept going. And the wildest part about being there was seeing the aid station action, where at Forest Hill, which is about halfway through the race, the first half is so brutally hard. It's about to get really, really hot. How long was her aid station stop?
Oh, so I mean, maybe 15 seconds.
If that.
She did a pack switch, and the way this race was is you had trackers. And so she like perfectly executed putting the tracker like in her shorts, like after. So she would like put it in her pack, take it out, put it in her shorts. So she could do this like beautiful pack switch.
It was like an F1 race.
Yeah, she had like everything dialed. I would love to see her spreadsheet. Do you think she has a spreadsheet?
Oh, I bet the spreadsheet's the coolest thing you've ever seen.
I bet you it's glorious. Well, actually, Katie and I have been messaging like before that. We started messaging before the race and then after the race.
That's pretty cool.
She's also the coolest human.
So you guys just started messaging before the race that you hadn't messaged before?
Yeah, she started following me on Instagram and I'm like, oh damn.
Yeah.
And then I just looked at it and there was like a message from her in my inbox, and she's a field hockey player. So we've been going back and forth on a lot of like field hockey stuff and race stuff. But she did tell me, she's like, after I came out with the pregnancy news, she's like, damn, you really crushed your taper. It's like the wise words of Katie Scheid.
Your coach didn't so much crush his responsibilities in your taper.
I mean, you crushed your taper too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both were very tapered. Maybe that was the problem.
Yeah, there's someone on your Strava that said you had to pull out because David couldn't. And I was like, oh no.
I know.
So embarrassing.
I mean, the thing is, you did.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously everyone knows that's not
I know.
Sometimes.
I know. Everyone knows. Yeah.
But probably for me, it's just, again, the taper actually probably, or, you know, my car crash. That's why the car crash was probably relevant, because if we've been doing this for so long and it never led to issues, it probably means that the whole time, you know, my sperm had like 8 tails and just weren't working. I mean, seeing Katie Scheid out there was just remarkable, because every single time I saw her, she was absolutely on fire.
And she looked so good in the process too. Like, she looked fully within herself. But you said it was shocking. And I think to me, it wasn't shocking, because I have followed her training closely. And the way it works is like, usually I wake up at like 4:30 or 5 a.m. I come downstairs, have my tea. I'm sitting on the couch and Katie Scheid is training in France. And so she's like uploading her Strava. And it's like a combination of like extremely motivating and also slightly daunting when I see her Strava, because I'm like 40 miles, 30 yeah. miles, like again and again and again. And she's like stacking these huge training weeks. And so like, I mean, if I had to put money on this race, I was for sure going to bet it all on Katie Scheid.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't shocking to me. And did you feel the same way, like seeing her training and understanding the context of what she was doing?
Oh yeah. I mean, she's Courtney DeWalter. In the same yes. way, I wouldn't be shocked by Courtney DeWalter. I would say shocking from a historical level, if you didn't have any zoomed in context of, you know, the type of athlete she was. But you know what I mean? It's essentially, it's shocking in the same way that seeing Steph Curry hit like a fadeaway three-pointer or Caitlin Clark is shocking, even though you know it happens consistently.
Which is why we watch Caitlin Clark again and again. We're like, yeah. we're here for the shock factor.
Yeah, somehow they do the same impossible thing over and over again. Same with Courtney DeWalter, same with Katie Scheid, same with Jim Walmsley. You know, these athletes at the very top of the game are just, it's wild to see in person. And basically, do you think the type of training that you saw has lessons outside of Katie Scheid? Like, because I do think it's really interesting. We got this question from a lot of people mm-hmm. that, you know, the training approach was a lot of really, really long singles. Like we're talking 20 to 40 mile runs pretty consistently, then followed by a flatter easy run.
And sometimes I would see things like 30 miles, yeah. miles, like stacking those across like back to back days
yeah.
with large verts. Like we're not talking about just like going out for a flat 30 miles, like big, long days in the mountains. And I mean, I don't think Katie Scheid herself necessarily changes my training philosophy. Like yeah. she's an outlier. She's a great, and I think
same with Courtney DeWalter.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And we interviewed Courtney DeWalter and she's functionally doing similar stuff to some yeah. extent. And I think like if we had a study and we took Katie Scheid's training and gave it to 200 women, I mean, I think we'd be left with like 198 or 197 women that are like injured or sick yeah. or, you know, overtrained. And so I think like we're capable of so much, but I've seen that time and time again
yeah.
as a coach that I don't think it's necessarily Katie Scheid that's pushing me in that direction. I just think she's an outlier.
She's an outlier. She works so hard,
yeah.
does everything right. She must do everything right.
She
outside
has to,
of running,
to sustain this. Yes.
To,
yeah.
to stay healthy. And also she must be so fast, like to stay as fast as she is through this process. I can't wait to see what happens next for her. I
think because she's a field hockey player.
Yes.
Yeah. She yeah. knows how to throw elbows.
That's true, actually.
Like, yeah. She played, we were messaging about club teams and she played for a team in Maine.
The sport background probably makes a huge difference. So incredibly cool to see. I can't wait to see what she does next. I mean, you know, she can be the person that challenges Courtney.
And I think she has the mental swag to do it too. Like yeah. it takes a level of like confidence and belief to go for a course record at Western States. And I feel like if it's like a slightly cooler year, even, I mean, honestly, even if it was like 115 degrees, it'd be like Katie Scheid could do it.
Yeah. I believe in her too.
Okay. But does it change your, how you think about training and training philosophy?
You know, I'm always trying to learn. I think in general, the more you see in the sport, you're like, all right, if you really, really, really want to win like at Western States or UTMB, maybe now there's a little bit more of a push to doing some like extremely high volume, back to back to back type
high vert, high density days. Yes.
You know, I got Jim Walmsley on the new video that just came out from Wahoo. I saw a screenshot of some of his training volumes and we're talking like his biggest weeks are between 22 and 28 hours of mm-hmm. training,
yeah.
of running, which is insane, obviously. And that would injure 197 out of 200 people. Jim, it works for, he's built up to it. He does everything right. But similarly, you know, we want to win some of these races, you know,
yeah. mm-hmm.
Drew finished second, but he didn't win. And the point being like, you know, maybe there is some room there at the edge, but the problem is like historically in the sport, we've seen people that do that type of training, not have long careers, but now we're starting to see them actually have long careers like Jim Walmsley, like Courtney DeWalter, like these really long careers. So maybe what the old fears of, you know, early burnout, like, you know, Anton Kropitschka or people like that, are kind of ameliorated by new approaches to recovery, nutrition, especially nutrition, like what you were talking about, and all of these things that make it so that dosing in that stuff in small doses rather than really big ones could be effective for athletes that are trying to compete at the very top level of the sport. I think you just need to be fast, because if you're not already fast, like you can't use it. And one of the coolest things about seeing Katie out there is, I mean, her first mile was like 6:20 something. I mean, they're just going so fast, you know?
Yeah, she's able to like roll on her feet very smoothly and very effectively. Okay, but how do you do that from like, so like you're not going to just go and give Katie Scheid type of training to yeah. an athlete. Like how do you identify an athlete that is able to do that? And like, what is the base foundation that they need to be able to step up? And how do you do that like gradually?
I think you just need to see athletes that show large amounts of durability over time.
Yes. Yeah.
And an ability to adapt to large training volumes. And then when you do that, back off the intensity, mm-hmm. obviously, because like you can't do both at the same time and essentially pulse it in. You know, we kind of always wanted to do that to a certain extent and we try to do it. But when you pulse in these like higher volume blocks, one, you need to have a lot of time to dedicate to it. Like you need to either be a professional or have blocks of not working a ton. And two, like you shouldn't be doing high intensity around that interval because you're just going to overload stress.
That's such a great point too. Yeah. And I feel like the, like to see what Katie's doing, it does require like that dedicated focus to like recovery and like the really pure focus on professional running, because yeah. like doing that in the context of a job, just when you crunch the numbers, doesn't work with hours unless yeah. you're willing to run at like 11 PM at night.
Yeah. The professionalization of the sport is really important. Big props to Katie Scheid. That was incredible. And then for men, Rod Farfard won. Absolutely shocking from free trail fantasy perspective. I don't know how many people chose him to win. I doubt it was very many, but maybe he did. So I read something. So after Black Canyon, which was, I think was 11 weeks ago, where he finished 14th or something like that, Rod was like, I'm just not sure where the line is between going for it and being smart or letting a race get away from me and all of these different things, the types of things that athletes face as they're trying to have that breakthrough. He's been going at it for years. And I'm so inspired by what he did, because it was clear that he decided at this race is that the breakthrough lies in taking a big ass risk, and he fucked around and he really found out. And I think the world found out along with him.
And I think maybe like what we're seeing is that he's tried that approach before and sometimes it doesn't work, but I feel yeah. like that doesn't mean that you always have to like change the approach. Sometimes it does mean you have to change the approach, but I feel like, you know, if this is like a 1 in 4, 1 or 3, it depends on, I mean, for yeah. Katie Scheid, it's like 1 in 1,
yeah.
but for like for mortals, which like
basically everyone else
yeah. but Katie Scheid, maybe it's like 1 in 3 and 1 in 4. And I think you need to keep like stepping up and putting yourself out there.
It was just an incredible performance. But then for men, Drew, podcast famous Drew
second. Freaking Holman. He had such a great race. He ran so smart. He was like cooling himself out there. His fatigue resistance, to see it live
yeah.
is one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen.
So we got to crew him and it was so fun to be with his crew. They're amazing. Sasha, his partner, is the best. But then just to see how Drew processes things. So he came into the driver's flat aid station at mile 37. This is after a long exposed climb. And it was just mid-60s to upper 60s in temperature, but sun exposed, which plays really hot. We're going to get into some takeaways in a second. And Drew came into the aid station in third and was clearly a little warm. And we have some data on just how warm he was with his core temp like around 102 degrees.
Which is hot.
That's hot.
Yes. I mean, it's getting to the place where you start to become like 102 is like, you're like, oh, this is a little tight. But like once you like creep up into like 103, 104, you start to become very concerned.
Yeah. And somehow, you know, that we focused all hands on deck with cooling him. And then as he leaves the aid station, I give him a little update on the athletes ahead and behind, because that's what he wants at that point of the race. Like we're very specific about that. I'm always honest with athletes on course. And Drew, who's clearly a little bit in the pain cave already, and you know, obviously with that body temp, just looks down and is like, all right, I'm going to go fuck this up. Which for us meant like, you know, I'm going to go cause some damage. Like I'm going to go do some things. And sure enough, he did. And really proud of him. But he turned down the golden ticket to Western States, which was always the plan. This was just to get a really competitive race in, get into UTMB for later in the year. And he gave it to Petter Engdahl, who won CCC a few years ago, one of the best athletes in the world. He's from Norway. And I have this amazing photo of him handing the golden ticket to Petter, and Petter just crying tears of joy.
Well, have you seen the video? It's even better. It was posted across a couple different things, and I watched it probably like 18 times.
Yeah.
Petter's just like crying on Drew's shoulder, and God. Drew is giving him like the best bro hug of all time. And I'm just like, this sport is so magical.
Also, it's amazing that Petter wanted it that bad after just suffering so badly.
I know ultra running is such a wild gift. You like destroy yourself in the canyon yeah. so bad to the point where you can barely walk, and then you're like, let me do this again.
And what's coolest to me is, so Petter dropped way back in the race. You know, he was at the front, but then way, way back. And I thought there was no shot. Like he was like in ninth, or I mean, he's way back, and many minutes. And then I was down at an aid station to kind of like see everybody come through. And all of a sudden Petter comes through in third, and he's fighting for every step, not thinking he's going to get a golden ticket at this point, because he was like 7 minutes behind Drew and had no shot of getting it. And he thought that they were gone, and he dug that deep. And that's what led to this like glorious, unexpected moment. And it's one of those things of like, never give up. You do not know what will happen if you never give up.
And basically everyone out there, like it was instructive to be at the finish line to finish this race, and to finish this race specifically like within the top 10 for the men and women.
Yeah.
You had to dig so deep. Everyone dug so deep. And I think like it is a reflection on just how hard these races are. Like yeah. we're no longer going out and like jogging. Well, I mean, it functionally, like for some athletes, athletes might be considered jogging, but like doing that across a course like this is hard.
Yeah. You just need to like buy some property in the pain cave.
Right? Yeah. Right. Establish it. Look forward to it. Welcome it.
What I tell an athlete was like, you want a vacation home in the pain cave. Like you don't want to take up residence there, but you do want to be able to go there on the weekends. And that's what these athletes are really have to do is be like, all right, it's a longer stay in that pain cave than usual.
It is an Airbnb to the pain cave. Leave a 5-star. But do you know what the other hug that happened on course
what?
Was between you and the Peter God?
Oh yeah. That was a special moment.
Adam Peterman stepping up to the Canyons 100K. It was his first like big race, I think in 2 years, coming off a sacral stress fracture. And he had a rough day out there.
Yeah, he won world championships like 18 months ago.
Yeah.
And then had the injury. And I think everybody kind of expected him to win. I know I did.
I did. I was like, he's a Peter God.
Yeah,
He's going to win. But also I imagine how hard that is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's hard to be in that position, especially coming back. Like the first big race of a season is hard.
Yeah.
And he had a rough day out there, was struggling. And he gave you a giant hug at driver's slot aid station in the middle of the race.
Yeah.
And I was like, the Peter God is just such a good man. He's so kind.
No, he's a good God.
Yeah. Yeah. High five. Yeah.
He came into that aid station and he easily could have dropped out, right? Like, what is the benefit for Adam Peterman to finish 14th in this event? You know, like you've already won world championships. You've won Western States. Why? And his answer to that was like, why the fuck not? And seeing him out there, to me, of all the stories, that might be the most inspirational is this champion being like, you got to put one on the board to really be able to then like go for it, you know?
Well, I actually feel like the physiological process of putting one on the board matters too.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like even though he suffered through this day and he was running like much slower than he planned to, like, because he's a god, like, I feel like he's going to take that physiological like response from this race and put it into like amazing. Like, I think his body's going to adapt really well to
and
it.
And I think that goes for any longer layoff. Like after pregnancy, you're going to have to put one on the board. And sometimes they have to be, you know, a little bit outside of your comfort zone. But after that, there's these long-term adaptation processes. We talk on here so much about the nervous system. It's like Adam's nervous system will be fundamentally different now than it was before that race. And I bet from now on, we just see sustained dominance from him in the same way that we saw before. But I did want to say at the finish line, he was so amazing. And I got to see him again and said, you know, we had a fun little back and forth. And I'm like, you're always the Peter God. Yeah. And he's like, no, David, today I was the Peter man.
Oh man. Give him I'm so glad you guys got that hug exchange.
It was so funny though.
He's such a good guy.
Such a good guy.
But actually, so for me, like I was having a couple different mantras for this race when I was able to do the race. And the mantra that I was going to have, if it was not a day that was going well, is to the moon, not now, but soon.
Oh yeah.
Which is an Alexi Pappas line. And whenever I'm having like a harder day, I put that in my brain because I'm like, this is actually the stimulus that's going to lead to like great performances down the road. And so I was like, I'm going to bury that like deep within my soul in case I'm having a rough day out there and need to finish and need to like call on that energy.
That's why you do big, scary, hard things. Like for me, after Canyons 100K last year, where it was very hot and it was a tough day, you know, I was able to finish and was able to finish fifth, even though it was really, really hard. I fundamentally changed after that.
Where you went to the moon after that.
My physiology has just fully shifted. It was that one event and I can trace it right back. And ever since, my numbers got great outside of the terrible crash and head injury and all that stuff. But like everything improved and every ultra I've done since then has felt easy comparatively. And it's like, oh, well, sometimes you just kind of have to go through the fire to, you know, be like hardened against the struggle, you know? And I think that that's what Adam did out there.
I have so many like rocket launching metaphors. I'm like, you got to launch, you got to go into Space Force before you go to the moon.
Or Game of Thrones. There's a idea that what is dead may never die.
Yeah.
You
I
know,
love that. Yeah.
Once you hit that pancake, once you fully occupy that space, you become invincible in this small little way that I think every ultra runner sees at some point.
Well, do you know what my mantra was for the day that was going to go well?
What?
So delighted from Alex Honnold. You know how in Free Solo when he like climbs and he summits and he's just standing up there and he's like processing everything and he just looks around and he says in like this classic Alex voice, he's just like so delighted, so delighted. And he says that like a couple of times with a grin.
Yeah.
And that's how I wanted to race, was just like taking it all in and just being like, I'm so delighted.
Oh my God, Megan. How does it make you feel though to be thinking about all of this? You planned more for this race than you've ever planned for anything by a million miles.
Which was fun. Yeah. Actually, I do feel like I got almost this boost from like thinking about doing hard things. Like I went through a fear response of this race where I was like, can an asteroid just like hit the earth because I'm afraid of doing this? And I worked through that and I got to the point where I was excited.
And making mantras and spreadsheets.
And spreadsheets and things like that. And I think even the act of doing that for when I do Canyons 100K in 2 years is going to prepare me and make me like a better athlete And so like, I'm grateful for it.
You're going to fuck some shit up. That's all I know.
Okay. Katie Shad better not be there.
No, no.
Actually, my race plan, which looking back, my race plan was going to be to tail her.
Yeah.
And think, I mean, I would have realized very quickly not to do that.
Would you have though?
Maybe for like 3 miles, and I would have been like, fuck this.
Would you have though?
I mean, for 3 miles. Okay. Yeah.
You're the only one that knows your own head. But we had talked about not doing that. And you had told me as soon as you got the positive pregnancy test, you were like, my plan was just to go on her heels and not let go. Classic Megan.
It's like we've done so many bike rides together where I just hold your wheel. And I was going to like visualize that with Katie. But I would have like, I mean, I don't have the like physiological capability to do what she did. So at some point along the way, I would have gotten like slinky to the universe. It would have been real bad.
Who knows? Who knows? Let's leave open the possibility.
Okay. That's like, I mean, I feel like you have to respect Katie Shide. There is one Katie Shide.
For sure, for sure. But I do think one of the benefits of not racing is that we can maintain this like aura of the legend, right? The legend continues. And in 2 years from now, the legend will fuck some shit up.
I would not have been puking on the side of Forest Hill.
Okay, so for women, MK Sullivan was second. Sub Ultra Beast, she has crushed that distance, and now she stepped up to 100K and rocked it and is going to Western States.
She had a rough day, a Black Canyon 100K. She sprained her ankle, stepped up. This was her first like 100K that she completed. And to see her do it, like with, she just had, I mean, she was executing beautifully out there. And it goes to show too that like you can step up into these distances and do great things on your first swing.
Exactly. And it was very cool to see, and speed matters too. And Anna Cassius was third, another incredibly fast athlete who is going to rock Western States. I mean, it's cool that this race does select really good people for Western States, because basically 2/3 of that course, but a little bit harder.
Well, how do you think the stimulus is? I mean, so I think are we 9 to 10 weeks out from Western States? Yeah. I mean, it is a lot to run a downhill 100K 9 to 10 weeks out. Like if we looked at all of these athletes in the golden ticket, like arena and their CK level, so like how much muscle breakdown they have, it is probably quite high.
Yeah.
Do you think it's too close to Western States? I don't think it is, but it does make me pause and hesitate.
I think the course is so specific to Western States that it's productive.
Like, it's actually a great training day.
Yeah. It's basically like, all right, you barely need to train between now and then. I mean, you will, but the sense being just like, if you have the skill set to excel here, you'll have the skill set to excel at Western States. And the downhills at Western States are the hardest part. So it's basically Canyons 100K plus some high altitude miles plus maybe 30 degrees temperature.
Yeah. Doing some like heat and sauna training.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when I do Canyons 100K in 2 years, I do think that like knowing the course and understanding the course, especially for this and downhill races, is important. So I would like to take a training camp weekend and go and cover the course. And what is Canyons 100K but a training camp weekend for Western States?
And I guess all the athletes that excelled there had seen the course, actually. Everyone that we talked about has either seen the course either in Western States or in training camps leading up to it. So that's really indicative of, I think, where the sport's going, which is if you do one of these big races and you want to excel, get out on that course.
Yeah, I think it's so helpful. Make it like a vacation. Make it fun. Like, I feel like the whole point of doing these things is to have a lot of fun, and you might as well add an extra weekend in there.
Yeah, and we're saying you in 2 years at Canyons 100K, but is it okay to say that, like, because of the uncertainty of early pregnancy?
Oh, I have stuff planned.
Yeah.
It's really
we
nice,
have plans
actually
on the schedule.
I was, when I was pregnant with Leo, I had myocarditis at the time. Right. And so like I was not training, and there was so much focus and pressure like in my brain, because like I wanted it so bad, and I want this so bad too. Like I want to be pregnant. I want like success with this, but like I do have backup options, and it's nice. Like I feel like the second time around, so many of my fears like surrounding that uncertainty have lessened. I think just because my body's been through this before, I know what to expect, and it is nice.
Yeah. I feel like the uncertainty response in human nature is almost always to try to exert sorts of control that actually don't do anything.
Yeah. There were so many times when I was pregnant with Leo that I was like, it was almost like superstitious. I was like, this particular thing that I'm going to do is going to impact this outcome. And now I've thrown all of that to the trees.
And that's just human nature.
Like, it's just going to be what it's going to be.
You know, you think where death is uncertain, human life is uncertain. Hence all of these belief systems pop up that like structure it to such a dogmatic level that whatever truth there is ends up becoming like distorted over time by like, you know, you have to do this random thing to achieve some superstition to, you know, be good enough for this principle that's obviously doesn't give a shit about like what you eat on, you know, whatever Friday or whatever.
But it's easier said than done, because I do think in pregnancy, like there's so many emotions, and I empathize with women out there. It's just, it's hard to go through. And it's like when there is that level of emotion and want and desire, it's like, the only thing like I felt like my brain could do when I was pregnant with Leo was to like exert some kind of control on that.
And who knows, there's still time for this young to come back. So while you're out there, how did it feel? Like, you know, were you sad?
I mean, I was. It was like, I mostly just tried to, I was coaching athletes. I coached Jade and Aaron Clark.
Two athletes in the top 10.
It was like, I just really focused on like giving them as much good energy as possible. And same with like, just drawing inspiration from people out there. Like,
yeah.
You know, I love babies. I want to have kids and they're not going to hatch themselves. And so like, I think I had that mindset out there is like my body's going through this and this is beautiful. And yeah, it is sad, but like, you know, I'll be back.
I think I said last week, I could give birth to like 8 fetuses.
You did. Oh my God.
The amount that we deserved this.
I know. How did we feel like foreshadowed a lot of things recently?
I feel like we're making too many jokes on the podcast. Like everything.
The universe is listening. There's like some weird God up there that's like,
the fates are chuckling. Okay. So a few training thoughts just from this race, just on things that we saw out there. The first is that the temperatures were in the mid 60s for the most part to upper 60s, but it felt like you were on the surface of the sun. And the cooling is the most important thing you can do for instantaneous performance improvements at basically any temperature above 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So get out there and practice your cooling. It is so key at every single race. Make sure you stay wet. Use ice when you can. Like this one variable probably makes the biggest instantaneous change in performance.
Well, even core temperature impacts like how you process nutrition, how your body absorbs and metabolizes things. And it's like, I feel like it's the variable that translates to so many things. Yet I do feel like I saw very few like ice bandanas, like iced up arm sleeves out there. And I feel like it was, I think the temperatures kind of made athletes think they didn't need that, but it was quite hot.
Yeah, quite hot. And it just points out that the studies back this up, that the performance impacts start early. Okay.
Okay. But you know what was interesting was Katie Scheid wasn't really cooling. And I think, which is bonkers.
Yeah.
Like you saw her, she like basically no one tossed water. I mean, there was like some water on her, but other athletes were getting much higher levels of cooling.
Yeah.
And I think she was just training for Western States.
Yeah.
That's true. Like, that's so wild. She's like viewing this as a heat stimulus as she goes and like makes ultra history.
Amazing. Okay. Number two is with Drew at aid stations, he had this like really dialed thing where you'd put certain numbers of gels in his pockets. I added 2 Science and Sport Beta Fuel gels at each aid station that we could crew in because I'm just like, these don't hurt to have just in case. I need to ask him if he consumed them. But I do think that the stuffing the gel, extra gels into pocket theme is something we saw consistently throughout this race. Like Rod was working with nutritionist Vic Johnson, and they both like, you know, collaborated to get over 90 grams of carbohydrates per hour. Essentially, that is becoming the ubiquitous thing that allows for these breakthroughs. You gotta fuel, you gotta stuff those extra gels into pockets. It makes all the difference in the world and allows these, you know, unexpected, amazing days.
Okay. Do you know what I tried for the first time this weekend?
What?
Neutral Beta Fuel.
Oh.
It's like, it actually tastes a lot like precision gels.
Yeah.
So like I classically have like the orange or the strawberry lime Beta Fuels, and the neutral was so delicious. I mean, it was like, I wouldn't call it, it was labeled as neutral taste, but it actually just had like a very fresh and clean taste. And I'm like, I could smash a lot of those.
So fresh and so clean.
So fresh and clean. Two C's.
The Outcast. Okay. That's really cool. You can get that on the feed, all this stuff. So you know, we're really into precision hydration in nutrition. So you can get that at the feed or Science and Sport Beta Fuel Gels, which has this neutral flavor that Megan talks about. So thefeed.com/swap, S-W-A-P. There you can get an $80 free credit if you click claim reward. Go do that right now. That is the easiest thing you can do to improve your performance other than cooling is getting some of these gels, practicing with them. And once you get good at this, it makes endurance a piece of cake.
And they do have neutral beta fuels. I'm about to go and order a lot of them because I want them for like my in pregnancy training. Like they're delicious. The other thing about the feed too is they send you, so they like, they take the gels like, and the way that they organize them and send them to you, they have them in bags.
Yeah.
And it was so clutch for packing because I just have these like feed Ziploc bags with all the gels in them. And their organizational system, I'm like, they're feeding into my spreadsheet. It's so great.
It's the best company and they are probably almost single-handedly responsible for some of the performance improvements we're seeing, not just in running, but in cycling, because they're really big in triathlon and gravel cycling. That's where the feed really made their mark. And this year they're coming into running in a major way. And we're seeing these performance improvements that are based on fueling. And I think so much of it is because the feed is making all of these new options so much easier to come by. Another one that I saw a lot out on course was Carbs Fuel, which is a 200 calorie gel with 50 grams of carbohydrates. That's really easy to get down. They sent us some. It's great shit, actually.
It's great branding too. I love that it just says carbs on it.
It's great. I mean, there's so many good options. In at the feed, you can experiment with like one gels of each, you know, and see what you like the most. So thefeed.com/swap, S-W-A-P. Presenting sponsor of the podcast, biggest thing you can do for us is go support them.
Okay, do you know what I'm sad about?
What?
I was so excited to slurp a crap ton of watermelon knack out there. Yeah. That stuff is delicious. It's
Did
so
you slurp
good.
Any as you spectated?
Well, no, I should have. I brought most of my stuff, but some of the like heavier stuff, I was like, yeah. If I'm going to race, I was like, we'll figure it out come race day. So I didn't bring the watermelon knack with me and I was very sad.
Very sad.
And I was like, I am going to slurp on it though for the next couple months.
Yeah. We need to like pour some into, I don't know, actually what's the best way to get it to the embryo, probably through your mouth, but you could go through any hole. There are all others that are closer.
Well, I'm glad there's other holes that don't accept those things. Yeah, like when you have like fire and ice lubricant, I'm like, this doesn't seem like a good idea. There is life down there. We should not be firing it and icing it.
Firing ice lubricant. Yeah. I was going to bring that actually for your race for anti-chafing because you've never really chafed, but I was like, we need to start thinking about that a lot more at the 100K.
So. Actually, there was a lot of chafing out there from what I saw on athletes. And I feel like just like cooling and heat and packs and a lot going on. So
I would have had that and then Pepto-Bismol Ultra, which I had at aid stations and no one used. I was trying to give it out like Halloween candy. No one took me up on it.
Actually, you were just taking all the gels that I was going to take in the race and carrying them around aid stations in the feed bag, which was great advertising.
It was like trick-or-treating.
I know. We were like, here, do you want doing like candy swaps? It's like, would you swap a beta fuel for precision, vice versa?
And I guess you're going to be training through this pregnancy, so we need a lot more of those gels. I probably shouldn't have done that.
I rode yesterday and I like slurped a bunch. I know, you took all my gels. I bought those.
Sorry. Okay, next up, the importance of hydration. We don't talk about that as much in a specific way because athletes vary so much in needs. But just like we're talking about fueling, hydration is a frontier of performance that really matters. So make sure at some point you do hydration tests for yourself to have a general feel of where you are, because we've seen athletes that do that and know how many ounces per hour they need are at such big advantages to athletes that don't have that type of knowledge. Like you could be taking in 16 ounces per hour when you need 34. And obviously your performance is going to crater if that's you. So dial in your hydration. We often saw athletes stuffing 3 or 4 flasks into their packs at aid stations at the elite level. That's insane. And it just points out like, okay, if you do have a high sweat rate, this needs to be a focus.
Well, the one thing that I had in my spreadsheet actually was stopping at every aid station to refill too. And I feel like it's almost always worth the stop to like take 15 seconds to refill your water or refill your hydration mix, because it's like, it's worth it. And it's going to come back in spades at the end of the race.
Absolutely. Number 4, how shoes feel when wet matters. You know, shoes and trousers basically are going to be wet a lot of the time. And I feel like shoes just vary a ton in that respect. Like,
are you obliquely referring to the Ultraflies?
I just don't think the Ultraflies handle water very well.
No, they do. They like soak it up.
Yeah.
I feel like the cloth, there's a cloth lining on the Ultrafly ones. And when it becomes wet, it becomes like wearing a wet cotton t-shirt. And you're like, oh, this is heavy.
Of course, nothing affects Drew. But
he wore the Ultrafly ones, right?
Yes, he did. So I'm curious to see if the Ultrafly 2s are like that. But just in general, make sure your shoes handle water well, run through water in them, keep running, see if you like it. I think that often athletes don't consider that when they're choosing shoes for these races.
I once did a photo shoot in Gore-Tex shoes.
Oh, yeah.
And they involved like running through water and like running through various places. And be careful with Gore-Tex shoes, because the magic of Gore-Tex is it like keeps water out.
Yeah.
But it also keeps water in.
That's
if
true.
You get water in. And so I think like just be careful with that.
Yeah. I don't think Gore-Tex is almost ever helpful.
Yeah. Do you ever recommend Gore-Tex shoes?
No, because if it's wet enough for Gore-Tex, you're going to get the stuff in your shoes.
You're going to be wet.
Yes.
And then you're
going to
be
too
like,
wet.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have like puddles in your shoes.
Too much wetness. The theme of this podcast.
I'm honored.
We're an hour into the podcast. Figure we might as well go for it with those jokes. Next up, carb loading pre-race. This is a place where I'm actually a little bit different than, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. So over time, the theory in some of the literature is athletes want to do 8 to 12 grams of carbohydrates per kilogram of body weight in the day before the race.
Which is, when you do the math, actually a lot.
Especially at the top end of that range.
Yes, yeah.
We're talking about a lot of carbs. And I am not so much a fan of quantifying in that fashion. And this has been something only from, you know, experience and coaching, where I think athletes that do that often have more of a mixed bag in race experiences. And I think it's essentially, it comes down to doing something totally different than you usually do. Because often with athletes have like well-rounded 40, 30, 30, or whatever you want to say, macronutrient breakdowns, you to get that level of carbs, you have to go like 80% carbs. And the body's just not used to it. And it throws everything off. It can throw brain chemicals off. And I've started to see some bad races around athletes who overthink this. And that kind of gets back to my do a pre-race burger and fries and just don't overthink it. Don't count anything. I don't know if that's helpful the day before the race.
I also feel like we focus so much on the day before the race, but it's actually like the week of the race.
And you're tapering.
And you're tapering. Exactly. You should be dialing back your training. And I think, like, you know, 4 days out, have a nice dinner, 3 days out, have a nice dinner. But I don't feel like focusing at all on like the 24 hours before the race makes a lot of sense. Like, you're just essentially giving yourself a gut bomb.
And I think the studies on it, when you look at how they're conducted. So there's a lot of studies in cycling, different contexts, but the studies.
Oh, yeah. If this were cycling, I could eat like 14, like.
But even then, I don't know if I'd recommend it.
Yeah.
You know, because like you're throwing your body off. But the studies in running are essentially looking at athletes and then correlating that with performance. But they're not prospective control studies, crossover design. They're essentially seeing what athletes do, observational studies. And the point is, athletes who fuel that well probably are just good at fueling in general. So we're catching confounding variables.
And then they're going to be great at racing because they're fueling the races.
Because that matters so much. But I don't know if carb loading in any sense is wise anymore. And I know that's a controversial statement.
I do think like increasing carbs, eating enough, having enough, like making sure that you have muscle glycogen on board. But like
if you're not training much,
overloading like high levels of loading, I totally agree.
Okay. This is the controversial statement of the podcast.
I honestly agree. Yeah.
Okay. You don't have to agree because I'm
no,
I'm
I do. I mean, I
there.
Think like there's a very important point for carbs and like good fueling heading into races, but bombing yourself with it, no.
Yeah, but I've never eaten a cheeseburger and fries the night before a race and been like, or a training day and been like, I'm underfueled now.
Well, that's our go-to. Yeah.
Yeah, but you could do pizza, you could do anything, whatever brings you joy, but just do stuff you normally do, not like 47 piles of rice.
I was going to say, aside from slurping rice. Well, it was really interesting all trip. Like sometimes we'd have like a bag of goldfish and we'd be like, how many bags of goldfish do we have to eat to get in like the like
800 grams of carbs.
Yeah.
We did so many calculations of like, we'd
like
have
six
to have
and a half bags 6. Of goldfish.
8 bags of large goldfish that Leo grabbed at the grocery store and put in our, it was his first time he's ever grabbed something and put it in the shopping cart. That's too much. And I think this applies to athletes that are thinking too much about their race meals in general, where I'm like, athletes are just eating the cleanest, lowest like residue foods. And I'm like, don't worry about it so much. Have fun. You're going to be pooping no matter what, I promise.
I also wonder if there's a sense of like, sometimes that I've seen like the state of overthinking carbohydrates also just worries me about the broader state of overthinking other things. And so I actually wonder if we're also looking at like confounding variables there too.
Yeah. Okay. And then final reflection is my favorite part of getting to go to these races is getting to see some of the back of the pack action. So I always try to go to aid stations where I can see the back of the pack in other race distances or get to see the back of the pack in the 100K earlier on. And it is just so inspiring to see people out there going for these big, scary dreams and pushing themselves in ways that, like, I think all of the same things apply, all the same principles, which is why we treat everyone like the elite athletes they are. But also it's a different context and a different way of pushing yourself. And I think in some ways much harder. And so always want to uplift that because the amount that people push themselves makes me feel like I can do anything when I see the backs of these fields.
It's so cool to watch it play out. So on Saturday, the morning of the race, I got up early, went for a run with Teddy, our crew and friend who came out with us. And we accidentally ran back against almost the entire 50K field.
That's so cool.
And they were like 3 miles in. So they were still like super joyous and stoked and high on life and got to give so many woohoos and huzzas, so many podcast listeners out there.
Aww.
And it was one of the most magical experiences I've ever had, is just like seeing that level of energy and also seeing like the full spread of the field. Like it took us a long time to run a mile because we were like, you know, there's people coming at us on a small single track trail, and getting to cheer on the back of the pack was so cool.
Yeah. We love you all. It must've been interesting in a processing fashion for you, you know, after you can't race, to then see all of these people who love you.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it was probably more joy than I would have experienced in the race itself, because I was like, I feel good.
Yeah.
I can actually say, like, usually when I race, I like can't talk or communicate very well.
Yeah.
And so I was actually like functionally with it, creating some life in there. And I was like, yeah, this is magical.
And we love you all. It means the world that you're out there and saying things. And I was just having a reflection that I think in some ways I was sadder than you about you not racing, because just from like a pure coaching and fan of the sport perspective, I was so pumped for this. I'd been having stress dreams about crewing for weeks, where like I would drop you off too late somewhere or miss an aid station or something. But it was all because my brain was so hyped. Like for the last few weeks, I had been getting nervous in the same way that I used to get before big baseball or football games, like that type of just raw excitement of like a 12-year-old. And so thank you for giving me that. And I was sad, and I share the grieving process of the race with you, even as I'm really excited for the future and you know, really excited for your future specifically. So, yeah, I'm sad that I couldn't see it.
I know. I'm sorry. Well, I'm curious because you had that response. And when I called my mom to tell her I was pregnant, she was like the first person I called within 30 seconds. She actually cried tears of joy because, well, one, she was very excited I was pregnant, but she was also so happy I wasn't racing the 100K because she was so nervous about my heart.
Yeah.
And I do feel like in my brain, it's like, you know, I'm having a great day there. I was going to have a great day there, but maybe like in 5 out of the 100 situations, something happened to my heart. And maybe in some sort of weird way, this is like the universe looking out for me. And I do think like that was a possibility. And I think I'm aware of that too.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. So yeah, thanks for being here on this journey, guys. Like we're obviously going through a lot as we record this podcast bright and early on the morning. Megan, how's your morning sickness?
I feel any great.
Maybe it's early enough.
It's like training actually really helps it.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's still pretty early and it's not like terrible yet,
yeah.
But training helps it a lot. And I think podcasting helps
podcasting.
It too.
We need to record a podcast every single day.
Well, here's the thing actually about pregnancy too, is that like, I feel like because people often announce at like 20 weeks or 30 weeks or like whenever 13 weeks, it's like, it always feels so short. You're like, oh, you find out they're pregnant. And then they're like having a baby the next week. And there is something about like being able to share the first trimester that's hopefully like very authentic in the fact of like, man, there's nausea. Like, you know, oftentimes people don't feel great.
And it's a long time.
Yeah. That stuff doesn't usually get shared. It's like having a Strava file and sharing like the last 10 miles of 100K and being like, yeah, here's it. I got to the finish line and this will be like a full 100K file, hopefully.
You know the reflection I was having?
What?
One pregnancy that goes to term, like maybe in a little beyond, is 7 stress fractures. You can get a stress fracture heal 7 times over. Yeah. It's a long time.
It is a long time. Then you get pregnant and have a stress fracture. I'm just kidding, because you're breastfeeding. But you know, there's a lot of complications.
A lot of complications. So if you want to, you know, support the podcast, go give it 5 stars and a positive review wherever you listen. Means the world to us, really helps out. And click follow. That's kind of what the algorithms look at, is how many follows you get. So even if you haven't followed yet, go click follow.
I didn't know that.
It's one of the main things because it kind of shows trajectory.
Yeah.
Even more than like episode to episode listenership.
Do we have metrics on follows? Is that something that you can see? I don't look at metrics.
Yes, for Spotify.
Oh, interesting.
And it's pretty, it's good. I mean, interestingly, most of our listeners are on Apple Podcasts, but Spotify's good numbers too. So we're moving up in the world, Megan.
Oh, it's exciting.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to have a baby for content.
Right?
The Cane's one did kind of good. A baby though, that's 9 months of content.
We got some good content going
on
here.
Years and years of content.
That's true. We got 18 years of content coming for you.
And then also bonus episode 100 is coming up on Patreon. We should have saved it. As
I know,
said.
Right? Yeah.
So patreon.com/swap, SWAP, bonus posts every single week there. And then a bonus podcast too, 30 minutes of question and answer. Last week, on the bonus episode, I did it solo because I didn't want Megan to have anything.
I wanted to do it and you wouldn't let me.
Well, I just, you had a lot going on in your head. I wanted you to focus. So I record it. And at the start of the episode, I recorded on Tuesday. So it was very early. And I was doing a Cannes 100K preview. And I said something like, Megan's so ready to throw down. She's got this. And barring any unforeseen circumstances, which I don't think will happen, she's going to rock it. Everyone thought I was referring to the pregnancy. And it's like, no, I had no idea. This was a total shock. So lots of fun there.
I feel like only my brain sees that. Your brain doesn't see that.
Okay, do you want to go straight to news and fun things?
Let's go straight to news and fun things.
We can do studies.
We actually have really good studies on strength training and on some like the challenges of functional overreaching and overreaching ahead. We'll do this next week.
Yeah, and also just individual response rates. I think the individual response rate study is really interesting because it shows just how much athletes vary in their response to the same training with the same background.
Well, it gets to the Katie Shide discussion.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like how many, if we gave Katie Shide's training to 200 people, what would that look like? And I feel like the study got very similar. It was just like 1/10 of Katie Shide's training.
Exactly. Okay, on to news and fun things. First up, there was a great article on continuous lactate monitors in triathlete. This was by Philip Skiba. He's a top thinker in this field. And basically, I think the big conclusion is continuous lactate monitors are coming. But the way these work is often they are gathering your lactate from sweat, which doesn't necessarily have a one-to-one relationship with blood lactate. So the sensors themselves probably have some room to grow. But as soon as these come out, I think it's the next frontier. So we had, you know, training changes with threshold stuff. We've had fueling changes. I think continuous lactate monitors are going to be the next, you know, 2% bump up that we get. And this is just going to be from a wearable.
Yeah, it's hard though, because I feel like these data aren't like 100% accurate.
These data.
I know. Megan, I paused for a second and I was like, do I want to do it? Do I not want to do it?
Why? I know. Why do we have to go into that?
Okay, fine. This data, they're not.
This data. Oh man, Megan.
Now I know how to make future babies.
I was thinking, yeah, high five. I was thinking about how to land that joke, and you did it in a much more appropriate way than I did.
Oh, you're going to go even more inappropriate than that?
Yeah. It wasn't going to work. It was going to be gross. I'm so proud of you. So the data make you feel a little bit uncomfortable?
So there's been studies that have looked at like what's the correlation between sweat lactate and blood lactate? And some of the articles I found, like, it's decent correlation, like 0.92, but like the highest correlation is 1, and we're not quite there yet. And I wonder if we have proxies for understanding lactate, like heart rate and things like that. Is that actually better than a correlation that's not perfect at 1? And especially for athletes, like you think about like Olympic level athletes and athletes where like these very small, minute levels in lactate variation actually matter. Like that difference might be the difference of like 20 seconds or 30 seconds a mile. And if it's not 100% accurate, are we better with other metrics like, you know, perceived exertion and heart rate and some of these other things that like probably like, you know, get at the idea of blood lactate?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. We'll keep you updated on that process. I don't really have a conclusion right now. I just can't wait to get it so I can experiment with it. I'm going to be so into it, Megan.
Well, it's great. It doesn't involve blood, which I think you would not experiment with something that involves blood. We have a lactate monitor downstairs and we haven't used it yet.
I would though, if with like the blood lactate like monitor, I would use a wearable even if it got blood, if it was really accurate with lactate.
Yeah. So, well, why haven't you used the lactate monitor downstairs?
Oh, that's just a little bit too much time to invest right now in opening the new one. Okay, on to the next one. This is the 776 Invitational, a wild partnership here between Alexis Ohanian and Gabby Williams. So Alexis Ohanian, you know, famous, like,
he's the Reddit founder, I believe. Okay. And 776 is a venture capital firm.
Yeah.
And so he's also the founder of 776, and he's married to Serena Williams.
Yeah.
And they have beautiful children. I actually followed one of their kids has an Instagram account at age like 5. Yeah. And I followed her on Instagram this morning. Okay. She's so cute. She's like balling out a bunch of sports. And I think it's really cool.
It's probably like we had an Instagram account for Addie though.
Addie does stuff. Yeah.
I doubt she's posting.
No. I mean, it's definitely in the parents' voices, but it's actually, I mean, and they get like 100,000 likes on their kids' Instagram photos.
Granted, my Instagram account is basically a Leo account mixed with like crash porn. So I don't know if I can talk exactly. And then Gabby Williams, amazing American sprinter. But they're launching this new track invitational that will give the winner of each event $60,000, the second place $25,000, and third place $10,000 just for women's track.
Which is a lot of
money. It's a lot of money.
And like, I feel like a lot deeper than a lot of these, or a lot. Like higher quantities than a lot of these other like prize purses that we've seen. But what I'm excited about is, so 776 is a major VC firm. Like they fund a lot of things.
Yeah.
This is kind of like they've had like some funding in like the women's sports world before. They actually funded a bar called the Sports Brawl in Portland, Oregon, which like broadcasts women's related events, which I think is super cool. But I feel like the fact that a VC firm is stepping into women's sports so intentionally, like clearly they're doing it for, I mean, he's married to Serena Williams, so he loves sports, but clearly I feel like there's also like a reason they're doing it for the firm.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing about women's sports. Like I feel like investing in women's sports is, if it's such a good thing for the VC firm, it makes me excited.
Yeah. Well, is it though, or is it him trying to almost give back in a way that will maybe break even? That's the question, is what is the business calculus here? We don't know.
But I imagine there is some business calculus, and that's what I'm thinking.
They haven't
inked
a partnership deal. No, I think it's a good thing, but you just
it
wonder
shows
about
the power of women's sports.
Whether it's replicatable, right? Just to be devil's advocate here,
yes,
because they're paying out all of this money for all of these events. That's a lot of investment. On the back end of it, where are they going to make the money from?
So visibility.
There's, you know, obviously gate receipts. So like how much people are paying to get in. Maybe you can fill a stadium, like a small track stadium. There's things like visibility and brand partnerships. Maybe that adds in a little bit, but you know, that's not going to be huge unless you also have then some broadcast partner that then makes it so that the sponsorships can be really big. They don't have a broadcast partner. So maybe they're betting on someone like ESPN or NBC coming in and paying them a lot of money for this. But why is that different than Diamond League, which just signed with Flow Track? And that's like a lesser deal. So essentially,
my point is, I don't think they're trying to recoup the investment. Like, I don't think they're trying to net even on this. I think the fact is I had never heard of 776 before this.
It's advertising for the VC?
I think it's advertising. I think it's much like the Lululemon Further project, where like Lululemon is not looking at the ins and outs of how much they spend on Further and like what they're going to make back on their new line of shoes.
Yeah.
They're doing it because in like 3 years, when they're like showcasing their brand, they're going to tell stories about what they did. Yeah. And I feel like 776 is probably along that lines, but telling stories about female athletes, like if that's a driver, that's cool.
I love that. That's I didn't think of it that way, that
I mean, I had never heard. Have you heard of 776 before this?
I know. No, but I'm also not following VC firms like I follow Major League Baseball teams.
Yeah, but now we are.
Yeah.
And now, that's the point.
Now I have the Alexis Ohanian trading card.
Now I'm following his daughter on Instagram.
It's true.
It was just a ploy to go follow Olympia Ohanian on Instagram.
It's a five-year-old Instagram ploy. Yeah. This is so exciting, though, and it's going to be absolutely game-changing. And we're excited just from a coach's perspective because we're going to have athletes competing in this meet, and it's probably going to give – you know, a tailwind to the entire sport. So can't wait for this. Okay. Next up is a message from a listener. Here it is. I just want to say thanks for always recommending to get lab work done. I recently have been feeling like poop and my MD attributed it to springtime in the Midwest. Lol. She finally agreed to run a few panels. And what do you know? My ferritin was 2.
Damn.
Looking forward to getting this straightened out.
Wow. I'm so glad this athlete pushed to get blood work. And sometimes it's hard because I feel like some physicians, like especially with like blood work or MRIs, and like sometimes you don't always need those things.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of time as an athlete, like you should advocate for yourself.
Always get answers under the hood. So I call this blood work season because a lot of people have quote allergies right now and they last for months and they're just dead tired and can't walk upstairs. And I'm like, good excuse to get your blood work checked.
Because look at that iron level. Yeah.
The thing you think is, you know, getting a little bit of like ragweed fever or whatever could be this iron or could be low vitamin D or whatever. And getting a look under the hood once a year, I think is pretty indispensable for everybody. And get it done. You might find nothing. You might just find out that you're doing things the right way. But almost always, athletes find something that they can make little interventions on that change the way they feel fundamentally.
And I think knowing what to ask for is super helpful. Like being informed and being like, here is what I want in terms of like ordering blood work. So I think three helpful things to start with: CBC, complete blood count, look at hemoglobin and hematocrit, iron, so ferritin levels, and then vitamin D.
Yeah.
And then if you have a history of low iron, get like more formal iron studies done. If you have like a long history of fatigue or like other weird symptoms, maybe consider thyroid. But I think those three, CBC, ferritin, vitamin D, are kind of like the three that I think about in like a standard healthy athlete.
So yeah, totally agree. And I'm also so impressed by you right now because we're now at 115. And please, please, please don't listen to what I'm about to say too much because it might cause an issue. You haven't peed.
I know. I actually really have to.
I know, but we're going to finish, Megan.
That's why I'm talking faster.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Like I have these points that because, I get across, but my bladder also has to get some point across.
Yeah, the hormonal change with the number of times you've had to pee might be our biggest hint in this whole process. So I'm impressed.
Well, I got an excuse now.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you like roll your eyes at 2 a.m.
Especially in the middle of the night.
When I have to get up and pee, and now it's like, you know, I'm creating life, man.
Yeah,
there's some byproducts of this.
Okay. Next up, actually some interesting developments in the political world or just in general in U.S. government things. First thing I want to talk about is that non-competes were declared to be illegal by the FTC, which I think is really relevant in the running and endurance space in ways that we don't really understand. So non-compete agreements are essentially these things that are in a lot of employment contracts. I read that something like 20% of all American workers, including a third of all minimum wage workers, have these in the contracts they sign, which is wild. I had no idea. But when you sign these contracts, it doesn't let you go work in the quote field of your employer for an extended period of time after you leave. Which is a huge problem when you think about it, because it really stifles the amount of movement that you can have and competition for labor, and probably depresses wages in the process.
Well, I think it also depresses like autonomy and like what you want to do. It depresses autonomy and like how you grow and build within a company.
And entrepreneurship.
Even. Yeah, it's really hard. And we see it within the coaching world.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually relevant for how we think about like coaches and maybe people getting into coaching, is that like oftentimes when you have like, would you call it like a coaching tree the best way to describe it?
Yeah, I would say the tree models where coaches come under an umbrella. That's a place that you do see non-competes. Like there's often non-compete signed, which we've heard of issues being happening in the past that can get kind of messy behind the scenes, get legal, where people bring lawyers into it when coaches try to leave these tree models. And you can see why the declaration that non-competes are illegal is so relevant in this world. And you can probably broaden it out to any world you care about. So the reason we're bringing it up is like, it might apply to you and you starting your own business to branch out from whatever job you're doing.
Even outside of the running world.
That's the point is like, I bet it's relevant to some listeners listening to this that can go start their own thing in the same world now that they couldn't just before. But the point being, you can see that in a coaching tree model, that tree, like the umbrella organization, better give a lot to the coach at the bottom of the model, because unless that coach is getting a lot and not having to pay too much back, you could see why they would just be like, all right, I'm established now. Thanks for the training. See ya. I'm going to go do my own thing.
Which I actually think is a great thing. Like the people within the coaching trees, like the roots have to be so strong. Like you have to be developing coaches. You have to be giving them education. You have to be providing something that like is irresistible for them
and
to
not taking too much money.
Yeah, exactly.
I think non-competes make a lot of jobs into a type of indentured servitude, essentially.
It's true, yeah.
And so this is amazing news. Politically, I think it's the most underreported story that is going to fundamentally change the way things work. And I can't wait. I mean, the place where non-competes have been illegal for an extended period of time is California. And there's a lot of theories from scholars that I've read that the reason Silicon Valley is in California is because of the non-compete exclusions, that people can go start the next Google or whatever when they've been working at a competitor. So in the endurance world, create competitors. Competition is good in this world, and you are not beholden to anyone, and you are not beholden to almost anything in your employment contract. I promise they're not going to sue you.
Which is so cool. Actually, I started asking a bunch of like legal questions over dinner last night. I was like, but how could companies or coaching trees get around this? Like, is there ways? And what you said is actually really interesting is like courts are going to be really prone to looking at this now and have a high bar to clear for this, for like behaviors that kind of like supersede like non-competes.
Try to get around the non-compete. And we'll see, you know, this will be challenged in courts, but I do think it's one of those rare places where both Democrats and free market Republicans are on board. The only people that aren't would be like the Chamber of Commerce, let's say. I think there's general bipartisan agreement that these need to go. So that's very exciting. Number two in the political world is there has been it's helpful to call it a ban of TikTok, where TikTok now has, or ByteDance has 12 months to divest TikTok to a non-Chinese brand organization.
Do you think they're going to divest?
I don't have any information. I mean, from the people I've heard, I think it can go either way, because one, there's just a fuck ton of money, like hundreds of billions of dollars are at stake. TikTok is being used 97 minutes per day by its users, which is mostly young people.
Which is so much. Also, the mental health ramifications of that are so sad too. Like TikTok is not, I think actually, I have to look, there was an article at one point that compared like Instagram to TikTok. Yeah. But like if you compare TikTok to YouTube, YouTube is by and far so much better for mental health outcomes for young adults than TikTok is.
Yeah. And I mean, we don't use TikTok.
No.
Because we're old people.
Yes. Which actually, it's kind of great because like sometimes like, I'm like, oh, should we? Like, you know, social media is part of what we do for like business and communication. And every once in a while it crosses my mind. I'm like, should I create a TikTok? And the answer is absolutely fucking not. And I'm so excited about that.
But, you know, I think there's a lot of dueling thoughts here. So first, if you're like us and you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever, there's a chance you don't understand just how impactful TikTok is on the world. Like you might think Facebook is cool or Instagram or like impactful. TikTok is absolutely within the youth brain more than any of that, all of that combined. It is taking up so much of the media space in that world. So I think there's a couple points. One is that's obviously a bad thing if it's owned by a government that might be able to put its fingers on the scales and change the algorithm in slightly, slightly small ways to change the type of content that comes up. You can kind of see where that would come into a little bit of propaganda. It would be an issue. And so I understand the divestment strategy that way. But on the flip side, you're like, well, one, free speech, like people can do and say what they want. And like newspapers could publish whatever the fuck they want. So why can't, these tools? But number two, I feel so bad for the people that have invested their lives in these apps. And it's like their platform. It'd be like, all of a sudden we can't publish our podcast.
Oh yeah. It'd be wild. But I do think it highlights that like, if you are a creator and you're relying on some form, you should have alternative forms to diversify yourself. Like, have we thought about that with the podcast? Actually, I have thought about that.
Well, I think podcast platforms are,
there's so many of them.
It's dispersed. So like if Spotify, for whatever reason, decided to put a paywall or something strange, you know, there's Apple, there's a million others.
We'd also put it direct on Patreon. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so I think.
And we thought about that even with Patreon. It's like, you know, Patreon is a tool that we use, but like we also don't know where that's going to.
Yeah, no, for sure. Patreon at any point could just pull the rug out from under us. So that's a big thing that maybe we should think about a little bit more if there's any way we can have control of that. But yeah, just a wild time, because I think it probably does need to be divested just from like a national security point of view. But man, modern era is just so hard when the platforms are just totally, you're at the whim of platforms. Like we have no control over the algorithms that, you know, promote our podcast, and some weeks we'll do huge numbers and it's like, oh, well, maybe I need to get hit by a car every week because the algorithms love when I'm hit by a car.
Well, it's also amazing. I just don't look at it and it's so great, but someone should look at it. And like, thank you for taking the reins on that.
Why does someone need to look at it?
That's true. That's right. We could just create an isolation.
The feed is supporting us.
Yeah. They've got our backs.
Okay. Do you want to get, let's get on to hot takes.
Let's go to hot takes.
You need to go to the bathroom. Okay. Here's one. Breathe Right strips are oxygen doping, not as effective as EPO, but also won't get you banned from the sports.
Yeah, Breathe Right strips are good. We actually saw a lot of them out there at Canyons 100K.
Solid number, not as many as there should be.
Yeah. Do you think they're like growing?
No, I think people think they look too goofy in Breathe Right strips. As a reminder, if you get the large tan ones, they stick. They stay on your nose even when you get wet.
Also, if you have a small nose, they solidify onto your cheeks. It's great. Your whole face is being uplifted.
It aerates everything. Yeah. But it's so good. If you haven't tried it, try that shit. How is Breathe Right not sponsoring us? It makes me feel so much like, oh, it's time to go. When I don't wear it now, I feel a little bit like I'm suffocating. It's so good. Okay, let's get on to listener corner. So proud of you for getting through this without peeing yet.
we are so close.
We are so close.
So close.
Do you have anything else to say though before we do?
Actually, it's wild that I'm like, my brain cannot think about anything else other than pee.
Yeah.
But do you know what else I can think of?
What?
Athletic Greens.
Athletic Greens.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of sad I'm not drinking it in pregnancy.
Are you not going to drink it?
It tells you not to.
Yeah.
I should probably follow this.
There's no studies.
There's no studies on it. Yeah. I mean, it's probably fine. It's functionally a multivitamin and people have taken it.
Yeah.
I probably won't.
Yeah.
I got a prenatal.
I think that's wise. But we do. A lot of our athletes do.
Yeah.
A lot of our professional athletes do. It's made a huge difference, I think, for adaptation and recovery for people. So drinkag1.com/swap, SWP. If you've never tried it, just go to that link. You can unlock offer. You get free vitamin D. So as we talk about blood work season, that's super helpful. You get free travel packs, and then you can cancel after a month if it's not for you. Just signing up there can make a big difference. We swear by it.
Well, we have bags now without scoopers because they're doing like environmentally friendly things and not putting scoopers in, but we never have a scooper. Yeah. So before the race, actually, maybe this is why I got pregnant. I had one day where I was approximating it, but I totally put in like 6 scoops of Athletic Greens.
Oh my God.
And I was drinking like Athletic Greens sludge. And then my pee was like a straight asparagus pee after.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why I got pregnant.
This is actually really scary because I started the same thing, obviously, and was overdoing it because, you know me, if some's good, a lot's better.
Well, I just, in my brain, I was like, clearly one scoop is like, you know, 6 spoonfuls.
Yeah.
It's not.
But before 2 years ago, when Leo got conceived, that's when we started Athletic Greens. Like I started Athletic Greens a couple weeks before Leo got conceived. Maybe there's some magical process that makes me potent in higher doses of Athletic
Greens. This is correlation, not causation, but it was a really delicious green sludge.
No, but we have gotten listeners that message in that the same thing happened. Obviously,
correlation, not causation.
We have enough data points that, you know, we could see spurious correlations.
Well, if you're drinking 6 Athletic Greens packs, clearly something's wrong with your body.
Yeah, but maybe the bigger point is if you want to do birth control, don't take Athletic Greens. That's probably the better point. Okay. Obviously that's all jokes. Don't hold us to anything we just said. Okay. On to listener corner.
I'll read it. I feel like the first time I came to message you all, I had so much to say, and I'm not sure how I can possibly express everything I hope to you all. First, David, I am so thankful, not just glad, that you're on the mend. You generate so much joy and positivity in this world, and I am so grateful I get to hear your dirty jokes, training theory, hot takes, and good vibes through my headphones every single week. Second, your reflections on the accident, what could have happened, and how lucky and fortunate you were in an unlucky, unfortunate situation really hit home. As I have mentioned before, I have been finishing up my PhD recently and has really become all-consuming at times. But your reflections help me step back and remember the things that are truly important to me. My beautiful, passionate, hardworking, supportive partner, our goofy, trailing, loving dogs, our health and happiness. These are far more important than a job, a salary, or letters after your name. Third, I did it. I successfully defended my PhD. This has been such a process. And whenever you all talked about Megan working on her PhD, I remember one episode specifically where David would catch Megan chuckling at her computer while writing her thesis. Always gave me such a boost to know that one, this is a big, tough, difficult thing. And that two, there can always be joy and laughter throughout the struggle. You all may not have reviewed any of my papers, QA'd my model, or gave me feedback on presentations, but you all are critical to my success. Thank you. Also, I slurped half of a big-ass show right before my presentation and the other half before my Q&A with my committee. And this N-of-1 study, I felt fucking awesome. I know someone else brought this up before on the podcast, but I would totally recommend doing this for anyone about to take a test, going on a job interview, or any other big scary thing where you need to be on your A-game. I sent you all an email with a couple pictures from my defense that I thought you would like. Thanks again for everything you do.
How cool is this?
That's so cool. Slurp the gels.
Slurp the
gels. I just did it.
Just before the podcast.
Not a bag. A small one, like a 30 gram, but it's good.
Maybe if we had done it before we got a little bit busy, I would have been able to control myself a little bit better and not mess up this whole process.
You'd have had glucose in your brain.
Yeah. I'm sorry that this, like, I mean, I know
you feel beautiful. You feel at fault.
I feel
it takes two to tango.
It does, but like, Kind of.
I mean, I'm so happy about this.
Okay.
It's the timing, I feel like. And it's the thing. It's like, as we get further and further away from Canyon's 100K, if this does happen, like,
yeah,
that's a temporary thing. Like, a baby's a forever thing. And I've always, always, always wanted it. And so, yeah, like, don't feel bad about it.
Okay.
I'm joyful. This is great. This is amazing.
I'm so proud of you. Seeing how you went through this last weekend when it could have been such a hard time, and seeing how much joy you brought other people with your presence brought me like so much meaning. And you're the best mom in the world to Leo. And the fact that you get to have another kid is just so good for the universe. And that part makes me really happy to just know that you get to be a mom again, and have two little ones and then stop right there.
You're not going to give me the whole basketball team.
No. People are saying a cross country team.
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
Yeah. So what I was thinking is last week, I debuted like a more extensive NPR voice for the first time. Mm. And then we found out you were pregnant. Do you think my NPR voice might have impregnated you?
I think it did.
Yeah.
I think it had some Athletic Greens and Precision. It was powered by the good stuff.
Okay. We love you all. Megan's going to go pee.
Yeah, it's going to be so great.
And as it comes out, she's going to say,
huzzah! Huzzah!
NPR pee.